The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good yawning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I don't know if some of my older Bahamians know this song, but this song here is a track by Collage Dem Boys, a group of young musicians and comedians and artisans coming out of COB, out of that sort of artistic academic space. But they wrote this track called Tags on Everything, and I think this was prophetic. I don't think they understood when they wrote this song, the multi-layered intensity of it. They were talking about youth culture, social culture, sort of this sort of culture of mimicking or following people. But I don't know if they realized that 15 years later, even their government would be trying to put tags on everything. And that 10% tag, it appears, is going on everything. Good morning and welcome to On the Clock with Erin Green. It is Thursday, the 28th of October, 2021. And we've got big news. The Prime Minister has announced his plan to reduce VAT from 10% to 12%. What a time. Everybody was looking forward to this, but I don't know. Is this what you expected? Anyway, I needed to play that song. For me, as a political satirist, I'm always in social commentary, political commentary and critique and how it arises. And for a culture that is so invested in music, for people that are so invested in music, from gospel to secular music, from local indigenous sounds, being drawn up on the beach to the most melodic voices in harmony in our most esteemed churches, right? That's what we are, music. And so I expect to see tons of songs and tons of critique in song, right? And in culture of our politics. That's just what I expect. So when I heard the news, that song came to mind. And I want you all to know I pestered Solo Maid yesterday. I pestered him. Solo Maid, I can't wait to hear the new track because this deserves a track of its own. So the PLP restructured budget in the House of Assembly. VAT will go from 12% to 10%. Items that were VAT exempted, that means had no VAT, like breadbasket items, medicine, and now be marked up with 10% VAT. Now, some people were indicating, let's look at that list. I know yesterday some people were saying that feminine hygiene products were previously on the VAT-free bread basket list and would now have a 10% VAT attached to them, but that is not the case. Women is playing VAT on feminine hygiene protection from the start of this regressive tax regime. In fact, I don't understand why women would have to pay tax on feminine hygiene products at all. I mean, this is a form of violence. We call it state violence, right? If the vast majority of women in your country, when they hit the age of physical maturity, begin a menstrual cycle and have a regular period of issuing blood from their body once a month. Why? First of all, why are those products not free for women, particularly young girls? But why would we have to pay not one, but two taxes on these products? Did I forget to say the vast majority of women issue blood from their bodies once a month as a part of a natural biological process? I'm already upset that we have to pay for feminine hygiene products, but why are there two taxes on it? Anyway, those were not on the breadbasket list before that, and they will have tax applied to them still. But dropping the VAT from 12% to 10% is a start. And I guess all of us women are happy for small mercies. I got another question, a couple more questions and things to point out before we move into our show this morning. Price controls are in place to ensure breadbasket items will be fairly priced. Now, here's what, that's a bit of an ambiguous statement for me. Are you telling me that price controls were always in place to ensure breadbasket items will be fairly priced? Are you telling me that you are going to focus on the enforcement of these price controls now that we've had a change in the tax regime? Or are you telling me that prior to this moment, no real price controls existed on breadbasket items but for the removal of taxes? And now, henceforth, you will implement a price controlling system. I think people are going to be very, very interested in how you will ensure that price controls are in place for breadbasket items at 10%. In fact, I think we need an entire overhaul. We need regulations to protect the consumer and ensure fair play in the market. Anyway, another question I want to throw out there, segue off. Who does this benefit? Is it people below the poverty line? Is it the working poor? Is it the middle class? Although, I mean, I want to say to you guys, middle class. Did working class, working poor and middle class, y'all are the same category of people, okay? Don't let political rhetoric fool you. Does it benefit businesses and service providers? Does it benefit the government? Right? I think that's an important question we need to dissect and determine. Now, I'm pleased to see that, like, this doesn't appear to just be a policy that they slap on us like a sticker on a watermelon in the market, that there's been a lot of critical engagement on the issue. The Prime Minister said that they are implementing or re-implementing the RISE program to support people who rely on breadbasket items and due to the increase may no longer be able to afford them. Anyway, that's very interesting. I heard some of the earlier commentary this morning. I'd like to join in and say there is no time to wait. Your government offers you an idea and you have an obligation and a duty to critique that idea and tell them how you feel about it. In fact, we have an obligation to each other to ensure that we engage this critique and respond to our government before matters like these or changes are entrenched in ordinary legislation. It's not just our job, it's our duty as citizens. In fact, it is government get better at what it does. I get two texts here. Start with this first one. Aaron, once on your show, you said you don't care what man's medical problem was. Stop peeing in public. I get tired of you on every show talking about female hygiene stuff. Okay, so first of all, you are raising the fact that at one point in time, I said that men should stop urinating in public places, particularly in front of people, and that if there is a medical issue involved that causes you to have to pee frequently, me as the person who is most likely to see your genitals if you are peeing in public, if you have a medical condition, there has to be another solution for both you and I. I should not prepare myself every day for the risk that I may see a man's genitals in the public, because of the 400,000 people in this country, and of all the people, anyway, I don't want to talk about people's personal salaries, but with all the money we're making in this country, that we can't convince businesses and the government that they have to follow the law and provide access to bathrooms for clients and customers, and that the government has an obligation to provide public bathrooms for its citizens, and should, if it is as serious as it says it is about its tourism product, and it seems that they are, I mean, they are regularly disadvantaging Bahamians to prioritize tourists, you would think that that particular government would invest in public toilets. It doesn't matter that they don't care to convince the banks that they have a legal obligation to provide bathrooms for their clients that they're going to insist should be prepared to wait for up to an hour and a half to 2 hours for service. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Also, you get tired of us talking about female hygiene stuff all the time. Let's run an experiment so that you will feel more comfortable. Let's not talk about it ever again. Let's not mention the fact that stores are now announcing that they are having shortages on paper products. We've already seen the shortages on feminine hygiene products. Let's not talk about the fact without careful strategy, policy planning, and care, we run the risk of having our labor force collapse because we don't have enough feminine hygiene products in the country for women to go to work safely and comfortably. Would you tired of hearing about it, sir? It must be hard waking up every day and looking at all of the women around you. It must be difficult and uncomfortable, like uncomforting. It must hurt. And for that, I am sorry, sir. Oh boy, I'm going to read these texts and then we're going to segue into our next segment. Today, we're continuing our conversation about domestic violence and domestic related crimes. And on one side of the fold, we're talking about sort of politics and economics, right? And finance, the state's finance, and maybe draw sort of a link to how people in economic crisis are more likely to be perpetrators or find themselves in situations of conflict that may result in domestic violence. Hey, all of these things add up, man. All of these things add up. Oh, wow. The VAT has been taken to 10% across the board and not include BBIs. More people will shop a little more and the fear of inflation will increase items up to 15%. Bahamians will not feel the benefits of the decrease in VAT. Thank you. Another text, morning questions were being asked about the reduction in VAT and what would happen to the revenue lost as a result of it. This increase on the backs of the poor, I get, or on the less fortunate. Very upset. Another text, give me a second here, guys. Give me a second. Got a text here that says, leave bread basket VAT free and increase VAT to 15% and move customs duty. Another text says, domestic violence, comma, the police who choked. Full stop, the police who choked the lady should be fired. Yes, that seems like an extremely aggressive act, but like the Minister of National Security indicated in some of his commentary yesterday, there may be a valid reason why this would occur. There may. There is a possibility, right? And so we are going to agitate for a clear and coherent investigation into what happened. Another text. Erin, how about advocating for reusable feminine products? That would help the environment and be more affordable than disposable napkins. That's a lot of pollution. I think what you're saying is advocate for a recycling of used products, which even then, I think we got a massive hygiene issue at hand. I appreciate what you're saying, but this is a basic function of women's health. There's no need to cut corners. We don't need to find a way to be able to afford it. And if we're looking at it realistically, this is women make up just over 50% of your population. What are we paying taxes for? No taxation without representation. If I could borrow something from my American friends. Another text says, also, you never justified your statement about not having equal health care because of your LGBT status. Please justify it today, because you can't just say anything. Read, please. I'll read your text. Maybe I'll answer it. Let me tell you what it is. It's about stigma and discrimination. It's about when you go into a space and you know you're not going to receive the treatment that you are due, that you ought to receive, or that others around you are receiving in your presence. And people make it clear to you, because you have made a decision about how to express yourself, that you should not expect more. That's how I could justify it, sir. And I don't need to justify it, because if you are honest and turn to your Bahamian brothers and sisters and ask them if they've ever heard the same thing, they will tell you that they have. It's time to go to a break. When we get back, we are going to segue into the next segment of our discussion. Thank you very much. Stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
Like what you're hearing on the show? Want to support the conversation? Sponsor On The Clock today. Call Janet Lees at 302-2304. That's 302-2304. Be the solution. Sponsor On The Clock of Erin Green, where she dissects, we discuss, and you decide.
Your business cards designed and printed for as low as 18 cents a card. If it's a poster you want, you can pay as little as $6 a square foot. But if your print needs a short or long run, digital printing, wide format, or print consultation, call the best. Call Printmasters. Printmasters' goal is to provide its clients with the highest level of personal, professional service at an affordable price. Our state-of-the-art technology also makes working together efficient and easy. Laminations, business cards, flyers, posters, window and floor decals are just a few of the digitized print services offered at Printmasters. Call 302-2361, 302-2361, or visit us at the Nassau Guardian Building in Oaksfield. Print with the best. Print with Printmasters.
Good morning and welcome back.
back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You are on the clock with Erin Green. It is Thursday, the 28th of October, 2021. And as we get into this new segment, I want to make a brief but somber announcement. I've just seen a death notice for a member of the Dungulik Farmers Market family, the Dungulik family, the Village Road community, the Bill and Harmony Hill family. I want to send condolences to all, including Louise and Nicola, on the passing of Nora Helen Duplessis. Nora was a tiny power pack woman, like my Jamaican friends say, the nickel but metallo. I mean, she just is a powerhouse, and Nora was always supportive of the new and young vendors at the farmers market, at the Dungulik community, and all the young people that pass away. And I want to say, sleep in peace, Nora, sleep in peace. Thank you for taking that small moment with me. I'll read this quick text before we begin the segment. It says, good morning, Miss Green. I still want to know why Monkey Tamron makes you itch. You didn't listen to the show yesterday? I'll tell you why, because it's the greatest security defense mechanism in the history of the world. Another thing, it says, Miss Green, the PM didn't say anything about food vouchers from social services if they are going to continue it. Well, they did make mention of an intent to continue the RISE program, which is a similar program using an electronic card for distribution. Oh boy, I'm going to read two more texts and then I've got to go. It says, also, after feminine hygiene prices raised, the women will now have to start reverting to using toilet tissue instead of pads. And instead of Pampers, women with newborns will have to buy washable diapers like back in the day. Okay, thank you. That's something that we need to talk about, women, even if the men don't want to join us. This text says they have reusable feminine products like the cup. Oh, I'm not downplaying the monthly cycle. My concern is the environment. That is a million products going into the dump on a monthly basis. Thank you. I forgot about the cup. That is something that we actually could talk about. And that is actually maybe the most sustainable emergency strategy we could employ at this time. Thank you very much. I'd forgotten about that. Okay. This morning, I wanted to continue the discussion that we started last week with Ms. Tonette Minnis from the Ministry of Social Services and Urban Development. And today, Ms. Minnis has brought with her another member of staff from the Domestic Violence and Counseling Unit. So I want to say good morning to Ms. Tonette Minnis and Mrs. Cheryl Carroll. Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Green. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely.
It
is a pleasure to have you here this morning. And if I could give a brief introduction, Ms. Carroll is the Chief Probation Officer and is a supervisor for the Domestic Violence and Counseling Unit and the Trafficking in Persons Unit. And Ms. Minnis is a trained social worker currently working in the Domestic Violence and Counseling Unit. She's also an adjunct professor at the University of the Bahamas, and she has a master's degree in social work with a concentration on children, youth, and family. Good morning, ladies. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. If I may add to that, Ms. Green, I am similar to Ms. Minnis with a similar master's degree in social work and counseling with family and children. I just needed to add that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, from the Clark Atlanta University School of Social Work.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So let me ask you a quick question. Do you guys have a formal or informal journal of social work or journal for social workers where you document some of your work or some of the projects that you are working on?
I don't think that that exists locally, but there is a journal of social work where research and evidence-based practice is documented both in the UK and in the US.
Okay, awesome. I know that that would be great for young people interested and people interested in doing social work to be able to connect with people already in the field, you know, and get mm-hmm. a sense of what the work looks like.
Yeah, so that exists. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So October is International Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And online I found an international theme, which is everyone knows someone. And so before we got into that theme, I wanted to ask, is there a Bahamian or Caribbean specific theme that you guys are celebrating?
No, we tend to adopt the international theme. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. And so what activities have taken place under this theme this month?
Well, I know if I may chime in, mm-hmm. on the 15th of this month, we had a virtual seminar about domestic violence awareness. And we are planning an activity for the end of this month. Well, it's almost the end of this month now, if not the first week in November, where we have some persons who have come out of domestic violence share about their experience and how they were able to recover.
Oh, that's awesome. And maybe if I, if I had a youth group or I was running a class at UB, I could message the domestic violence and counseling unit to get access to the recording of the virtual session that took place on the seminar that took place on the 15th? Or maybe...
Yes.
Awesome. That's mm-hmm. awesome. Another question. Will you be hosting any events for 16 days of activism from the 25th of November to the 10th of December?
No, we do not have any plans for that event at this time.
Well, look how I have some friends. We're going to go somewhere. I know some local NGOs that are planning some activities. I'm going to see how we could get you all on board. This is awesome.
So, wonderful.
Yeah, man. I think between the Crisis Center, Equality Bahamas, I know that there are a number of events. Zonta as well as Women United, I think. Women United in Action, I think a group run by Podesta Moore. I expect to see a number of domestic violence awareness-related activities taking place at that time.
Sounds good.
So I really want to hear from you guys what work you're doing around domestic violence during the month, beyond the month, and how we on the ground, whether we're advocates or ordinary people, can support your work.
Well, Mrs. Minnis, if I may start, and then you can chime in. Within the Department of Social Services, within the Domestic Violence Unit, we the agency, have persons who come in with domestic violence cases. They can either call us, they are can be referred, they can walk in with domestic violence cases, and we provide counseling for the individuals. We provide temporary shelter for the individuals. That is the level that we are at in terms of dealing with domestic violence cases right now.
Okay. Can we talk a bit about shelters and safe houses?
Sure. The unfortunate thing is the government does not have shelters and safe houses, but we do partner with private organizations where we are able to house persons on a temporary basis. And temporary is usually for seven days. It can be extended to 2 weeks, depending on the circumstances. And beyond that, if it's something that is so major that they must stay in the shelter or the safe house for that period of time. There is another private organization that house domestic violence victims and their children for about 3 months. They can go up to 3 months. Okay. Usually it's for 4 weeks, but it can be extended to 3 months. And then we have the Salvation Army that we deal with there in partnership with us. But they are the organizations that, and then there is a private hotel that we also partner with in accommodating persons who need temporary shelter, not necessarily only domestic violence, but the hotel, we place persons there temporarily.
Okay, now, do I need a police report to go to a shelter, a police report that says I'm a victim of domestic violence, or I've made a complaint that I'm a victim of domestic violence? Like, is there anything I have to prove to be able to access one of these spaces?
Of course, there is one of the private shelters requires for you to have a protection order. And the reason for that is just in case the person may find where they are and come on the property, they can alert the authorities and show the authorities the protection order, and that protects the other residents. We like for them to do a protection order for that very same reason, but would we deny them getting shelter if they didn't have that? No. But we do like them to go ahead and apply for a protection order or file a police report so that there is at least some evidence of the incident that would have taken place.
All right. A couple of questions. So I'm 19. I've come from the family island. I'm trying to go to UB. I'm living with family/family friends, and there's a dispute about when, you know, what my curfew is as an adult. And I come home one evening, say 10 p.m., and I find all my things on the porch or in the road, right? What do I do next? What options are available to me?
You could call the hotline, and they could arrange for you to have emergency shelter that evening. Until the next day, they would tell you where to go to follow up and receive additional assistance. That may not necessarily come to us, even though it's a domestic situation in that you were living in a situation and they put you out. Our community support centers deal with just the basic housing needs where you need temporary shelter on an emergency basis. Yeah. So you could call our hotline, which is 322-2763 or 422-2763, and that's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and the officer who answers that phone will be able to organize shelter for you on an emergency basis.
All right. And if I can add to that also, that if the individual, if the case or the person does come to the domestic violence unit for any reason, we can then in addition to the temporary shelter or housing, we can ask them if they would like counseling with the family, because the shelter is, the accommodation is only temporary. So once that time is up, she would need to have somewhere to stay. So, you know, would you like for us to speak with the family, find out why is it they threw your clothing out? What is the problem, so we can deal with it, so she can have somewhere to stay long term? She's a student. She needs long term accommodation. And so social services temporary assistance will not benefit her in the long term. So we would really want to speak with the family and see how we can resolve that differences.
That's awesome that you provide that level of support. Now, what types of shelters exist and what can people expect? So we have shelters for single men. Do we have shelters for married couples or for couples? Do we have shelters for families, for women and boys? What type of shelters exist and what do we need more of?
The challenge is we do not have shelters for men. I know the Great Commission had a shelter. I don't know if that is still up and running. But the shelter that we provide is for mother and children. But the male children have to be, Ms. correct me, I think is 12 and under.
They cannot be. I think it might be actually at age 9.
9 and under.
Yeah.
If they are going into the Salvation Army, but if they are going into the other private facilities that they can be older than nine. But the adult males, we don't necessarily have accommodation for the adult males. We definitely need more facilities, because even now we are at the point where most of the facilities that we use are almost to the max in terms of accommodating persons. And so we need a government facility, a facility that is operated and run by the government. We definitely need more private citizens, because there might be some persons who have facilities. They may want to consider renting it to the government or using it as a shelter. So if persons are listening to us and they are in that category, they can contact us at the Department of Social Services.
Okay, thank you. Now, we need lots of shelters, but we also don't want a ton of unregulated shelters or spaces.
Oh, for certain. They will definitely have to be regulated, investigated, make sure that they have adequate accommodation, facilities, and everything else. Yeah.
Right. And they would also, I would add, need to be staffed properly. I think
yes.
I had the experience of working with a private citizen whose mother left them a home, and they created a shelter. What they found was, because they didn't have adequate staffing, they had persons who moved in and needed assistance, but they couldn't get them out. And so having adequate staff and processes and procedures and all of that stuff in place, having a shelter is one thing, but running a shelter is not a small feat at all. Ask anyone who is affiliated with the Salvation Army, they will tell you. So you have to have some rules and regulations clearly in place so that people have an avenue to get in, get the support they need, but you don't want to enable them.
Does government?
Exactly. And you definitely need, Mrs. Minister, like you said, trained persons in the facilities.
Yeah.
So you cannot just get any and everyone to run a shelter as if it's just an accommodation. You come in for a period of time and then you leave.
No.
Because when you come in, you want to be able to get some help because of the reason you came.
Right. And so it raises a couple of questions for me. Does government or the Ministry of Social Services in particular, in conjunction with maybe National Security or AG's office, does the state provide oversight regulation for shelters and for private shelters in the same way it does for homes for children and the elderly?
I'm not sure about the private facilities. I'm sure they probably do have a government-run regulation. I'm not sure that the Department of Social Services has a unit that facilitates accommodation, the private accommodations that we have now. I'm not sure if the Department of Social Services oversees those facilities.
We have the disaster management unit that oversees the shelters in terms of hurricanes.
Okay.
And there is regulations in terms of the requirements for that, and how to authorize those shelters and going in and making sure that they're up to code. So the framework exists for that, but to say that we have that in terms of providing shelters to the greater public outside of a hurricane emergency, I don't know if we've transitioned to that as yet.
So
I know of a private facility, two private facilities where they have board members that oversee the operation.
Okay.
See, so social services may not be involved, or social services may have a representative on the boards.
I got you.
In that regard, to make sure that, yes, so the representative from social services is on the board. So that is a part of the oversight of the private facilities that accommodate domestic violent victims.
Right, because I want to encourage people to initiate and to start creating shelters, right? from a you know, NGO and a sort of private sector perspective, but we want to be very careful. And so I want to be able to direct interested people to a space where they can find out what the requirements are, what the best practices are. And then I got another, and it's sort of entirely different adjunct, no pun intended. There's a lot of concern raised for young men, for men and boys. I've a text here that says, look, they know that boys are being kicked out of their homes for being gay and for being disruptive and for being unruly at the ages of, and abused at the ages of 12, 13, and 16, yet they have no places for males. The text goes on to say, it is sad a woman at 20 can get help, but a boy at 13 can't. And so
I need to add, Ms. Green, that now they have, and if Mrs. Minnis can recall the name of the a recent housing that was social services began in partnership with an organization that has a house for young boys in that category, young boys and girls in that category. So they do have somewhere that they can stay.
Right.
The challenge is that is the only place at this time.
I think they need
to have more persons come and agree to have those type of facilities.
Right. And,
but if
and
they want more information, they can call us and we can give them more information.
Absolutely. And most importantly, we're not just saying, oh, these little by them need some place to live, we'll build one house. We have an obligation to protect these young people no matter what situation they're in. And so for me, we can't be rescuing them from one situation, but making them even more vulnerable to potentially predatory adults.
And that's actually, that situation, we need to public awareness in terms of, okay, as a parent, you put them out of your house, but then what you're forcing them to do is make some dangerous choices. And there are people out there that are preying on these young people, male and female, who, because of the choices that they've made, their family has put them out and turned away from them, but now they're having to make some choices. Okay, do I put myself in danger so I have some place to sleep tonight, or do I, put myself in danger by sleeping on the beach for the evening? You know, so there are some choices they're being forced to make. But I think we've been partnering with Colby House is the house that I think Miss Carol is referring to. But again, that it's a capacity issue. So once they're full, then what, so we really need to do better in that regard to safeguard these very vulnerable population of youth.
Absolutely. And another question.
Yeah,
go on.
No, and I was going to say, because piggybacking on with Mrs. Minnis' observation is that when we put them out at 12, 13, they are still minors. By law, we are still responsible for those children.
Right. And if you're beating the child to the point where they feel it's safer for them to run away, you are a part of this abandonment, right? Like, you're part of the process.
Yes.
Now, another question. Definitely. When we think about shelters, I got a lot of friends and neighbors who are fishermen. And so I spent a lot of time on the dock, and we could see that we have a unhoused person's situation, and tons and lots of people are looking for shelter and spending their daytime in the area of Potter's Key Dock, right? Do we have sober shelter? Well, do you think we are ready for what they call sober shelters? In Colorado, in the United States of America, there are shelters where you don't have to be sober to go in. So they call them like no sober shelters. You can be intoxicated, because they realize that most people are having difficulties managing their substance abuse because they're dealing with issues like houselessness and homelessness. You think we're ready for those types of shelters that can accommodate people with substance addictions and substance abuse issues in the facilities?
Go ahead, Mrs. Minnis.
No, I was just going to say that I think that we need to rise to that occasion. Above substance abuse, we also have a lot of people who are mentally ill, mm-hmm. who are in need of shelter and in need of support. You know, we have people that go into Sandilands, they get stabilized, and then they're sent home. And what happens then? Mm-hmm. So that aftercare, that being in a facility where you can have the continued support, the continued teaching on how to manage your mental illness and substance abuse or whatnot. So we need to rise to that occasion. We're not there yet. I know we have Teen Challenge. I don't know if you need to be sober to go to Teen Challenge. And that's a male, male-only shelter for people that are dealing with substance abuse. I think we need to get there because we have a lot of people who are walking the streets and who are in need of shelter, but who are dealing with these substance abuse and mental health challenges.
Go on, Ms. Carroll.
I think it also goes to a governmental level because in our agency, then it starts with the persons at the top agitating that these are things that we need. Yeah. And then those in power seeing the necessity of it and agreeing that, hey, look, this is something that we can do. I know that COVID pandemic has dampened or caused Sandilands to close down their shelters in Bernard Road, Fox Hill. I know they had two facilities for, I think, two or four accommodations there, and because of COVID-19, they had to close those. But facilities like that, and then we need a person's trained. First, we need the government to understand that there is a need and something has to be done. I think I heard that is an area that the government indicate that they would look at. Mm-hmm. So maybe at this point in time, they can start looking at it so that we can have some facilities. Like Mrs. Minna said, I don't think we at the level of what you explained that we need in Colorado. But I think we need now to definitely have some facilities, some accommodation for the persons at Portiski, the persons with mental health. Yeah. Issues, we definitely need to start with those things right now.
Right, because we have to break this stigma. We have to find a way to break this stigma. Because some of the people that we interact with on a daily basis that initially we are discomforted with, we want to run away, or worse, we want to row them and ask them why they in the road, why are they forcing us to see them, right? And then when you meet these people, when you truly interact with them, you realize that there's some of the sweetest hearts.
The challenges.
And even through the crisis and the trauma, you know, some of the most beautiful people, and they deserve more than our disdain. Yeah. And our disdain comes from our discomfort, which comes from our feeling like we cannot do anything to help.
Or even just a lack of understanding.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Ms. Minnis, I got a call. And Ms. Carroll, I have a call. Let's go to the caller, and then I've got some text for you. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. Thank you for waiting.
Good morning to everybody. How you doing this?
Good morning.
Great? Good, good.
Good morning.
Great. I'd like to ask a question. Okay. Rather than just reading on persons to come in saying that the shelters may be available, a lot of times persons are fearful of even going to shelters. And what are you doing towards mostly like how you have beliefs walkabouts and check homes and do special checks on homes to make sure that something that may be so detrimental that places can't really get out to report it, that you will do house checks, neighbor checks to make sure, and then note that you'll be able to detect these things even if the person is trying to hide. Mm-hmm. And also, what do you do towards, you know that they have organizations such as the police force and so forth that would normally pick up ladies and arrest ladies and take them into custody and so forth. I noticed lately that you don't have any protection against ladies because most of the times men police officers would pick up ladies and it don't normally be ladies police officers no more. It look obviously now that men even is allowed to search ladies as they take them into custody also. So what are you going to do towards trying to protect these individuals?
Well, I don't know if that fits under the purview of the domestic violence and counseling unit.
Sounds like a police question.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's an important, I appreciate the question very much. And I'm going to get on that because that sort of ties into the discussion that we've been having earlier this week. But I want to keep it separate, if you don't mind. But thank you very much for that
intervention. But Ms. Green, if I can just respond to one aspect of what Paula said in terms of going to different people's homes, we cannot just do that.
Yes.
Legally, we cannot just do that.
Right.
Just walk around and go into people's home.
Right.
And one of the tenets of our profession is a person's right to self-determination.
Right. Exactly.
And what that means is they are able to make choices for themselves, even if those choices are to their detriment. Until they are willing to ask for help and seek help out, they cannot be forced. A lot of times people think that because we're social services, we can walk into people's homes and force them to come. We can't do that.
Yeah.
No, and just like you said, the person has to be willing. And in addition to that, we don't have the manpower to do that. Right. You know, just to walk around and see what is happening.
We're entering people's home with a clipboard and a pen and paper.
No. All right, so ladies,
legally we cannot do that.
I'm going to read this text and then I have another question. It says, Aaron, there's so many abandoned buildings that people can donate. And people like me and others can help restore. As a small country, we can do better. So the question is, how can people get into contact with your specific unit? And who should people contact to make donations to the government's specific effort or to the work taking place in the community?
I would say the ministry, because I do recall the new minister of social services saying that was one of the things that he would be looking at in terms of looking at buildings that could be used for shelter. And so I would say to contact the ministry and seek out the permanent secretary or the minister himself to offer their assistance in that regard.
Absolutely. And the numbers for the shelters, I am trying to pull my list from last week, Thursday. I think I have it here now. The numbers for your shelter, or the National Hotline for Crisis Intervention, is a 24-hour hotline, and it's 242-322-2763 or 422-2763. Any other numbers to throw out?
Well, if you want to call directly to the Department of Social Services Domestic Violence Unit, is
604-4300. So I'm going to repeat those three numbers again. We've got 322-2763 and 422-2763. And that is the National Hotline for Crisis Intervention, and it is 24 hours. And then the number for the Domestic Violence and Counseling Unit is 604-4300. And I'm going to add the number for the Bahamas Crisis Center Hotline, and that is 1242-328-0922. That's 328-0922. I got one last text here. It says, great job, Aaron. Thanks for this show on this very important issue. I just retired from teaching, and I think we prefer to teach girls over boys. So the male is defeated from the start of school. Please, people don't see this as they should. Yeah, we really need a deep introspection into why boys are performing the way that they are and feeling like they are not a part of the system. But look here, boys, we love y'all, even if y'all is man and don't like hug. We love y'all, and we're finding a way to love you in an appropriate and supportive way.
Go ahead, Aaron.
No, I was just going to thank you for coming and invite you to come on again. So please close out the show.
Okay, I was going to say with the males, we need more males as role models. I know I am thankful for those that we have and those who are doing their part as role model. But listen, the young boy grows up in a home. Who is in charge of the home? Mother, sister, the female. You go to school, who's the principal? the teacher, a female, you go before the courts, who is there, the female? I'm not knocking the female. I'm not knocking the female, but they need to see men in position, men taking their leadership role, men who can lead them, men who they can say, not only the basketball stars, you understand, we need to see men in the home as their role model, men in the community as their, they need mentors, they need persons to lead them, the male factor.
Yes, and not men instead of women, men with women. Next to women.
Yes,
modeling
definitely.
A balance
Working
of power.
Together.
Yes. Yeah, that is the natural state. Anyway, I would like to thank you, Mrs. Carroll and Mrs. Minnis, from joining
thank
us from the Ministry of Social
problem.
Services. My door and my Zoom room is always open to you. I think this is a fabulous show, and I think we need to have another discussion next month, definitely. That's my producer.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us, Erin.
Absolutely. We're all out of time. It's a wonderful show. Thank you to my audience for sticking in. It is 11 a.m. That means it's time for Levon Miller and Unleash. So stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. We're signing off on the clock. Have a great day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.